The ability to generate and sustain positive energy is the most important element in mental toughness. On this cassette side, you'll learn about something called high positive energy and how that's where you want to be for peak performance. We'll help you understand the connection between your body chemistry, your emotions, and your energy. You'll start being able to identify your energy state at any given time, and you'll learn how control of your energy states is at the heart of being mentally tough.
On February 22, 1980, the world witnessed the power of positive energy. Some called it momentum, others referred to team spirit, and there were those who said it had to be inspiration or luck. When the United States ice hockey team defeated the Soviet Union in the 1980 Winter Olympics, fear, anxiety, negativism, and self-doubt had been banished by Coach Herb Brooks and his Boys of Winter. They exuded confidence, determination, self-belief, and joy. Judged by an objective standard, the United States should have been blown off the ice in the early rounds. Even Brooks thought so before the Olympics. Quote, "You know what our chances are? Slim and none." But instead of being eliminated, the United States upset Czechoslovakia 7-3 on February 14th. 2 days later, Norway went down 5-1. On February 18th, it was Romania's turn to succumb, 7-2. Then West Germany, 4-2. It was time to face a powerful Soviet squad. Coach Brooks gathered his team for some final words, and this time he didn't mention slim chances. "You are born to be hockey players. You are meant to be here. The moment is yours." It was their moment, and it wasn't destiny, and it wasn't luck. The Americans skated onto the rink and outperformed the Russians, even though the Russian team possessed more experienced players with superior skills. Members of the United States team performed at the peak of their physical skills and talents. The Russians did not. That made the difference. The intense positive energy of the U.S. hockey players put them into the ideal performance state. The same focused energy that the U.S. hockey team thrived on is the energy that you need in your business and personal life for anything that's important to you. Peter Drucker, perhaps the foremost management consultant in the world, told me in a personal conversation at the Tarrytown Conference Center that a manager's first job is to control his or her own energy, and secondly, to help orchestrate the energies of the people around them. You, as a performer, are first and foremost a controller of energy, and the energy you bring to the battle is the single best predictor of how you will perform.
The best athletes, the best performers, are great managers of energy. That's really what it's all about. Mental toughness is really managing energy. That's why we need to deal with the whole issue of emotional control, because energy and emotion are so connected. When you talk about motivation, what are you talking about? You're talking about emotion, but you're talking about energy, drive, power. You're talking about mobilizing all of those resources within your body that are capable of maximizing energy output. It's interesting when we start to examine how we see differences in the way people respond with energy rest. After only 1 month of controlled waves in a predetermined pattern, Randy showed dramatic. We begin to see, particularly with new competitors, with new athletes getting into the arena of competition, is that they start withdrawing emotionally when things don't go well. They start taking energy away rather than investing energy. We call that tanking in sport. What it means is you stop putting yourself on the line, you stop taking risks with yourself, and you can lose now, not because you didn't have the talent or the skill, but because you really didn't care. If I had really wanted to do well, I could have, but it wasn't important enough for me to give my best. People who have problems with tanking never achieve greatness in any context. They are the whiners, the complainers. They are the people who refuse to take risks.
One of the ways that you could diagnose yourself as a tanker or others who are working with you in the business or the sport arena is what we call laugh it off humor. It's when I use my laughter to put a facade on the fact that I am not confronting. And it's my way to joke, let myself off the hook. A lot of kids you see, and kids will use laugh it off humor. There are a lot of people who are tankers, and it's what Albert Camus calls philosophical suicide. You go through your day without ever investing that energy that you need to. And you know you'll never get called on the carpet because you're so safe, but you'll never have any genius and you'll never have any fun.
Another very common emotional response to adversity and crisis that helps again to kind of protect our self-esteem is that of anger and negative emotion. A lot of negative energy is being emoted. And the reason for this is we find that if I can find something to get angry at, if I find a reason to get furious, it kind of excuses me from performing well. In sport like tennis, someone like John McEnroe has learned to manage stress by anger, by temper tantrums. But it really is a false answer. Your ability to fine-tune your concentration, your ability to solve problems and to think clearly is severely hampered when you are in a high negative emotional state. But this is very common. People resort to anger to protect themselves from this business about, I gave my best, I gave everything I had, and it wasn't good enough. We're always kind of protecting in one way or another.
Again, it's a management tool. And the way Jim has explained it, and the way you might look at it too, is that we call it, anger is the hardening of the categories. In other words, when you get angry, you literally become so focused that you really can't see the problems or the options that are out there. You become myopic. You can either get angry or you can solve problems, but you can never do both. And we see a lot of managers in the business world who manage with the tool of anger. An angry manager always begets tankers as a group of employees. He teaches them, or she teaches them, how to tank. They know that in certain things, you just don't approach the boss. So they begin withdrawing energy and emotion from a lot of things, and you end up with an entire company that tanks because it's ruled with negative energy. So anger, unlike tanking, is putting energy in, but in a very negative sort. And what happens is you destroy team spirit, you cannot achieve ever the goals that you really want to achieve, you don't have any fun, and you die about 10 years early, which is great. You might as well, because if you're not having any fun, you might as well check out.
The third major emotional response that athletes have when confronted with pressure and problems is that of choking. Choking really means being overwhelmed by the nerves, by the pressure. And we're going to talk a lot more about this later on in this tape series. But we have come to understand, actually, that choking is a good sign in many respects. It's much better than the person who is tanking or handling pressure with anger. Nervousness, in a real sense, says you care. You're still putting yourself on the line. You are vulnerable. You've stuck your neck out. And we're learning that in order for you to achieve peak performance, you have to put yourself on the line. The only problem is, at this point, is that you haven't quite been able to manage the pressures associated with this situation in the most optimal way. But you're closer. You're closer to the bullseye than you are at any other time. But it's the most uncomfortable one, and it's the one that people will do almost anything to avoid confrontation with, is this issue of nerves.
Yeah, somebody once said there is no problem so big that you can't run away from it. And in many cases, that's what we do when we choke, is find the problem so big that we do run away from it. I believe you should, for just a short time, just to gather yourself together and come back. When you get out of your comfort zone, that's when choking tends to happen. So if I deal with a certain kind of product, and all of a sudden, even though it's a raise and it's a promotion, I'm now dealing in a new arena, then I choke when it comes to a closure or phone calls or exchanging information on the new product. And so it's choking is something managers should look for. It's something you should look for in your kids. And instead of giving them the old choke sign, you should say, you have made it to the next phase. Now let's just make it through this one, and we've got it. And Jim, I know you wish that somebody had helped us, me for sure, as a tennis player, because it wasn't my skills, it was my emotions that stopped me at ever becoming any good. To get through choke is one of the greatest things, one of the greatest obstacles to be overcome, and you are there. You're in the challenge response.
What we find is that if you're not successful very quickly, you go back to tanking, you revert back to anger, you go back to more primitive strategies, and then you really sideline almost permanently your ability to achieve peak performance. And we really need to, each one of us needs to understand where we are in that continuum. Are we kind of stuck in the tanking phase? Are we stuck kind of in the anger defensive stage? Or are we still a little bit in the nervous stage? Or have we mastered what we call the challenge response? And this is our goal. This is actually saying to oneself, you got to take the heat. You got to take a risk. And you got to learn how to manage the right kind of energy so that you can really get the positive emotions engaged in the face of problems. In a sense, you almost come to love the problem arena. The challenge response, in a word, is exactly that. It's that my emotions become engaged more powerfully. I have this incredible energy experience from the positive emotions when I face a dilemma. I believe that I can deal with this. In fact, I love dealing with this. I'm willing to put myself on the line because I know the benefits are there and I believe in myself as a performer. But that's a learning experience. That's something that just doesn't happen. That only occurs amongst the greatest performers, those that have consistently mastered the mechanics of energy management. And that's exactly what this program is all about.
It's interesting that my favorite story about someone who overcomes all the time is the story of the fool in the Middle Ages. In the Middle Ages, literally, the fool was a cultural presupposition. Every king had his fool. And the fool was the only person in the kingdom allowed to make fun of the king. And one day, this fool in this particular situation goes too far, and he tells a joke on the king that the king doesn't like. He calls the guards in. He says, take this guy out of here and kill him. So they start to haul him out, and the nobility comes up, and they say, king, you can't do that. This guy has worked well for you for 40 years. So he says, whoa, come on back, bring that fool back. So the fool comes back, he's standing very calmly in front of the king. And the king says, look, I'm a divine right king. I said you got to die, I can't go back on my word. But, he said, because you've worked well for us for 40 years, I'm going to allow you to choose the way you want to die. And the fool bowed slightly and said, sire, if it's all the same to you, I should like to die of old age. And what we would have done is we would have said, when the king says you can die any way you want to, we'd have opted for quick, instant death. And I could see myself saying, I'll take a gun, I'll take cyanide, I'll take anything to help me die quickly, because we missed the point. We didn't bring our genius to the table. But what the fool has done for 40 years is his job, is to bring joy and fun and humor to pain and sorrow. And so he has practiced every day. He had almost had his own mental toughness training program. He practiced every day in the midst of problems, to turn them around, to have fun with them, to play with them, to love them. I love problems. That's the fool's response.
That is a learned response. That is something that our toughest athletes have learned over many years of conditioning. They've had either great teachers, they've had people who have helped them to understand that by staying challenged, you have the best chance of solving the problem and of also bringing your best to the situation day in and day out over the long term. So we're really learning mental toughness is abnormal. It's a very unusual response, but it is exactly the response, the energy response, that produces the best results, the peak performances, the white moments. Because this energy component is the single most important dimension in the ideal performance state, it's important to really look at it closely. We looked at two dimensions relative to this concept of energy that really proved to be very, very helpful. The first, we know that all of us experience energy on a continuum from low to high. The intensity of the energy, we all relate to that. Everybody who's listening to this tape right now is somewhere between 1 and 10. 1 being virtually no energy, you're asleep, pretty much, or 10, you are so fired up and excited that you can hardly stand it. That's one dimension of energy. There's another dimension which really proved to be quite useful, and that was the dimension of the, kind of the quality of that energy experience. And that was that some states of very high energy are very pleasant. They're very enjoyable. Some states of very high energy are very unenjoyable. We actually now can create a continuum of like from 1 to 10. from one being very unenjoyable, not pleasant at all, to 10 being extremely enjoyable. And that really created basically four cells.
These are the four cells that make up the internal energy states. High positive energy is a combination of a high intensity of energy that's fueled from very pleasant emotions. It's energy without tension, a joyful enthusiasm, but enthusiasm that's under control. This is performance central, definitely where you want to be for top performance. Energy that's very pleasant but of a lower intensity is called low positive. You're calm, easygoing, and in a state that encourages creativity. This kind of energy is ideal for relaxing and recovering. The high negative is that blood-boiling fight-or-flight condition. You're angry, you want to get even, and for a performer, it can be a very dangerous place to be. The fourth cell to consider is the low negative energy state. Nothing gets done. You feel drained and listless, depressed and overwhelmed. You want to go hide somewhere. As you'll see, staying on the positive side of the scale is crucial for performing at your best. And being able to move from high positive to low positive, from performance to recovery, and then back again, is a vital skill in mental toughness.
We find that all of those energy experiences are part of our lives, and that there are certain things which are very characteristic of all of those energy states. We found that, first of all, peak performance is universally, as we said earlier, a function of high positive intensity. An energy experience that's high, but also fueled from the positive emotions, hence making it enjoyable. Energy experiences that are high negative in the form of anger, in the form of fear, you have great intensity, but it's not enjoyable at all. And then we have energy that's low and positive. That's an energy experience that we frequently find when we're relaxing, when we're quieting, when we're involved in an activity that's maybe not that motivational, and it may be that we're just laying back. It's very, very enjoyable just to kind of float. And on the other hand, we see the low negative, where we have someone who is not energized at all, and what little energy is there, it's like it's not fun. It's in the extreme, this is the burnout syndrome. And we're beginning to understand that our best performers are very skillful at identifying where they are in which of those quadrants, and specifically how to get to the high positive energy cell the fastest. And we're also coming to understand that moving from the high positive to the low positive is an essential skill balancing stress and recovery. That the more easily you can move from a low positive to a high positive, the better manager you will likely be of energy as a total.
Remember Peter Drucker saying that first and foremost, we are managers of our own energy if we are to be great performers. And number two, we are orchestrators of the management of energy of those around us. When you watch Joe Montana step off the field, he is perfect low positive. There they are, the 49ers losing by 2 touchdowns, 3 minutes to go, and he's looking around to see who's in the crowd. He's talking to his coach about where they're going to dinner tonight. But the moment he steps back on the field, he activates the high positive arousal zone, and he goes in and he dances and he plays and he moves through the opposition. He is a really terrific manager of energy. So my job to ask myself as a performer is first and foremost, how do I get to the high positive energy just before I go into a performance that's really important to me? And once the performance is over, how do I drop back down to low positive energy? Then the second question to say to myself, I have certain rhythms during the day. Sometimes in the morning, I happen to be high energy. What about you? Where is your energy level in the morning? Where is it at midday? I know that a lot of people have low energy in the afternoon. How do I give that a little kick in the rear end to bring that up to high positive? And so I can begin to look at myself as a person who first and foremost takes care of my own energy, understands where I am on the energy chart, and kicks it to the appropriate zone just before performance.
I think that's really important.
It's important also to understand exactly what feelings belong where. If you're in the high positive energy cell, you're going to feel energetic, you feel lively, you feel stimulated, you feel vigorous, enthusiastic. You feel like you've got boundless energy. It's a great, fun kind of energy. If you're in the low positive, you feel relaxed. Sometimes you can feel tired, but you don't sense this driving passion. You have kind of entered a recovery cycle, and by choice, it's simply kind of letting go. It's a feeling of letting go.
We call that, by the way, the space cadet syndrome. That is, you're really enjoying it, but if you were playing tennis, you forgot your own score, but you know the score on the third court down. You're just a little spacey, and it's a great place to be on relaxation.
In terms of high negative, you're either fearful, anxious, angry, frustrated, upset. You want to get even. You have lots of intensity. You have emotions, but those emotions are not fun. They're not enjoyable. Is John McEnroe having a great time? If you'd ask John, are you having a good time now when he's throwing a temper tantrum? He'll look right, and then you better duck real quickly. Low negative is a feeling of kind of being bored, of being annoyed, irritated. In its worst form, it's the feeling of being burned out. We need to be able to take inventory. We need to be able to understand the connection between our moods and our energy experience at any moment and our ability to perform. You need to always be able to take inventory of where you are, which quadrant of energy, which cell of energy. And in the past, we have always thought of ourselves as kind of being at the mercy of whatever conditions make that happen. We've never really looked at that in the sense of, I can take responsibility for which cell I'm in. Well, I will tell you, the Mentally Tough program teaches you to take full responsibility for which cell you end up in. And the majority of your performance life needs to be in the high positive or in the low positive side of that axis. The more time you spend in the high negative energy cell, you will eventually pay a price by going to the low negative energy cell. And the consequence and the price is both unhappiness and poor performance. So first of all, we've got to take inventory, and second of all, we've got to take responsibility for whichever cell we're in, and that begins us on the road to mental toughness.
You know, one thing you might add to that in terms of environment is that the very words you use for high positive are the words that if I ran a home, my house, if I ran a business, my corporate culture would be built around the words alert, energetic, stimulated, inspired, enthused. If I am enthused, then we have team going. So you can walk into a corporate culture any day of the week, and you can feel those words. Either they're there, or the fearful, angry, frustrated, vengeful words are there. And the corporate culture then is helping or hurting you toward your own performance. What we're saying, however, is that it doesn't matter the corporate culture. If you're mentally tough, you are responsible for your own. If you are managing a household, a classroom, or a company, then your job is to also extend what makes you a great performer into the environment itself and surround your people with that kind of an environment.
I think it's important to make a distinction between the peak performer and the workaholic, because on the surface it may appear as though they're pretty much one and the same person. The peak performer has learned how to periodize their work episodes with appropriate periods of relaxation and recovery. They've learned how to manage energy effectively by managing their recovery times as efficiently and as effectively as their stress work times. The workaholic has not learned that lesson. They go until they drop, and then they try to go again, and eventually workaholic leads to burnout. Not the case with a peak performer. They can go forever because they have the balance of joy and fun and energy and relaxation and recovery. So there's a big difference.
You know, I think of a good example is Ross Perot, who works extremely hard but balances out with a lot of fun and joy in what he does. I also have a friend who's the chairman of a insurance group, the Madison Group, Neil Groff, who literally looks from the outside like he's working all the time. But the guy has scheduled a 3-day vacation every 10 days. And he will come back from a 5-day trip to New York City trying to deal with some insurance problem. The moment he gets back there, he's up to Vail for 3 days. And people think he's always moving, but what he's doing is really putting that periodization effect into his life. I think in order to bring this particular cassette to a close, what we might end up with is helping you realize and being consistently aware of your particular energy zones. And you might think of high positive energy. It's that quadrant which you're pumped, psyched, jazzed, wired, treed with energy, and it's all fun. It's all positive emotions, love, joy, fun, humor. And what was a recent time that you were there? Has it been today? Was it yesterday? What were your feelings? When are you usually there? Are you a morning person? Are you an afternoon person? When are you at your best from an energy management point of view? Let's look at the other cell, low positive. And remember, these are the two cells that we want to constantly go between. We want to raise our level of energy for our performances. And when the performance is over, we want to understand how to de-stress, how to relax into low positive. It's kind of laid back. It's kind of, you're not telling jokes, but you have an ability to laugh. You're not really focused, but you're having fun. You're totally relaxed. Now think of a time when you were in that phase recently. How do you trigger that phase again? Do you come down off your high positive energy well enough? Are you a great energy manager in that case? Then let's look at the side we don't want to stay on very often. Your ability to notice that you're getting angry, that you're in an angry state, that you're in a vengeful state, and immediately say, no, I don't want to be there. The cost on my system is too enormous. How do I get out of that state? I want you to think of a time in the last 2 or 3 weeks where you let your anger get the best of you, and you were in that state. Probably you were kind of proud to be in that state for a little while, and you wanted to just stay damn well there. How did you get out of it? How do you take yourself from high negative to a more relaxful low positive? Because it's your way back to the performance state. And lastly, think of the burnout state. That is what we call low negative energy. I'm bored. Life has no meaning for me. I'm upset. What we found in corporations is when we have one burnout, we usually have a bunch. Burnout is very contagious.
It's very important that you understand what your tendencies are. Where do you typically end up in a given time during the day? What happens to you typically? We all have patterns. We have to learn our patterns and then come to understand how to break them. But first of all, when you face problems, do you end up kind of in a tanking zone, which is either low positive or low negative? Do you kind of withdraw energy? Do you end up getting very angry, very negative, very intense with negative emotion? Or do you get nervous? Do you get highly frightened? Where do you typically end up when you confront problems and adversity? That leads to the next step, and that is learning how to manage energy experiences so that they are consistent with our performance objectives. Performing at our best means high positive energy.